Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in. Happy New Year. If you're a fan of Trading Places, Merry New Year. We're loaded up today, man. Great to be back. Good little breather. Missed you. And apparently Danny Burke did not miss us. He is having mechanical problems as he slurred to me with the airplane he's on. So the Pride of Chicago is on the tarmac in Chicago, allegedly. We bring in Willie J. Willie J, how the hell are you?
Doing good, man. How are you? Excuse me.
Good. Put that down and, yeah. And sound off.
That was ugly.
Did you have a good birthday?
I did. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
20.
That's 20. It.
Okay. Mm-hmm. 20. Mm-hmm. Nicely done. Willie J is here for 2 hours. I'm here for 2 hours. Chris Schmidt, great to be with you on Hail Varsity Radio. Can dial us up 466-3776-1-800-825-5865. Numbers to get in. Find us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio or at Hail Varsity. Jacob Padilla, Mr. Husker Basketball Insider. We're going to get him ready to rock and roll in about 15 minutes. We'll get the latest on Nebraska-Maryland from him. A lot of talk about college football, the Bulls. Man, that was hard to see Texas do what they did last night. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, college football analyst and college game day participant, will be with us in 1 hour. Andy Markowski before Nebraska tips off with Maryland, and a jock doc for you. So we're ready to go. We'll get your calls here in 1 minute. And as always, can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. So we'll start off with a little Nebraska basketball, get to some college football, and move forward. How you feeling about tonight's game? Nebraska, Maryland, I think the line is -1. Terps are favored. Nebraska and Maryland have played a lot, and they've been tight ball games. Nebraska won out there. I think it was New Year's Day 2 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. Yeah, it might have been. We're gonna go medium between 2 and 4. We'll say 3 years ago, Ty Webster and crew went out there, and Nebraska started 3-0 insanely in the Big Ten, and then finished 3-15. I mean, that was an 0 for February with that one. But yeah, they won against Mello Tremble in Diamond Stone back in the day. Somehow, some way, they won by 4 or 6 last year. That was a tight ball game. Maryland kind of faded at the end. And what an opportunity for Nebraska. I feel like the Nebraska basketball fan right now is just waiting. It's a turnstile, the bandwagon. You're high and you're excited when they win, when they crush Creighton. You're the biggest, and that's okay. Your heart's been broken a lot. But if they lose, they are going to lose some games here between now and in March, okay? It's 20 games. It's conference schedule. Penn State sucks except when they play Nebraska. That's on the horizon. Sparty's coming up. Iowa's good. The whole freaking conference is ranked, it feels like. Illinois is garbage except they should have beat Gonzaga. Okay? There's no easy ones. There's no gimmies. And to me, what I want to see tonight is, if Nebraska falls tonight, so be it, they fall, okay? But how do they fall? Do they fall getting the crap kicked out of them in the paint like they did against Texas Tech, like they did against Minnesota? Or is it nip and tuck and Maryland makes a few more plays? That's kind of what I want to see. There's as experienced as this team is with Coach Miles' squad, they still can get better. They still can improve. I don't know that they can change what they are, which is more athleticism and finesse than strength and power. But I got to see what they can be. And this is good. They've had three cupcakes. They've had a month off. They're playing a young basketball team that's really, really good. But are they good early? No, they're not. They're beatable tonight. So we get caught up with Jacob Padilla. Moose has been hanging on the line, bless his heart. Moose, go ahead. Welcome into Hail Varsity.
Hey, Schmitty, how are you?
Good, brother. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I'm always on the inside of the turnstile.
Good.
And I'm fired up for the rest of the season. I think that the three-point shooting has gotten fixed a little bit, which is going to open up the lanes. So I don't think that many more teams are going to be able to gunk it up the way Texas Tech did with us.
Tech's really, really good.
They're really a good team, which it turns out is both of our losses are to pretty darn good teams. Minnesota's no slouch themselves.
They are not. That one hurt because you had a double-digit lead, and you were almost up double digits on Tech. Different team. Nebraska's gotten better. Moose, I think that Nebraska is a better three-point shooting team. They're closer to, 50% now in their last...
Right, 47.4 or something like that.
They're right there. They've grown. They've gotten better from downtown, which they had to, right? But are they going to do it against this level of competition? Now, they went nuts against Creighton. Great. I'm glad they did. Creighton really doesn't defend. Okay.
Right.
And then the cupcakes they just played, they should drill them three-point line or not because they're Nebraska and these other teams are weak.
Right, I agree. I think worst-case scenario, the remaining 18 is 9-9. I think that still gets them in the tournament,
mm-hmm.
but I think they're going to go better than 9-9. I think Fernando gets his tonight. I don't think there's any getting around that. But I think we pull one out, and either way, I'm just excited for the rest of the year, my man.
I want to see him play well. Moose, be good. Thanks for listening,
okay,
and keep staying on that inside of the turnstile. Am I wrong there, Willie J? You go to Nebraska basketball games when we let you out of your cage here because you're always here. You sleep over.
Yeah.
You grew up going to Nebraska basketball games.
Uh-huh.
And you're a guy that doesn't waver.
No.
You get heartbroken and disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
But you still love them.
Exactly. You know, you're right, though. I mean, when we're good, people love us. When we're bad, I mean, when we lose one game.
When they're supposed to be good and then they underdeliver, people are really, really irate.
Oh, man. They just think we're the worst team in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's annoying. It's annoying. There's nothing you can do about it. There's really not.
No, right? I mean, the casual bandwagon Nebraska basketball fan, and don't kid yourself, you know one. And I'm not going to go as far as to say you are one, okay? Because that's not nice. Part of my New Year's resolutions, as my wife said, is stop being an a-hole. So I'm working on that. But no, you know a Nebraska fan that isn't diehard, hasn't waited in line to get great seats in the student section. Is that still the thing? We had to.
No, it's just online, man.
So, but you can reserve your spot in the student section?
You can't. No.
Okay, no, so you got to get in line to be there.
Oh, right, yeah, to enter the building, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. So that's still good. That's
mm-hmm.
still good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, no, I think they'll play well tonight. Here's my worry. This may seem super petty, but you have James Palmer. He is from Upper Marlboro, Maryland. How do guys perform when they go home? The guys try and do too much when they go home. Got family, got some friends. I presume we'll be checking him out. Is it gonna be big game James like he's been? He's been super efficient. I know the last outing against Southwest Minnesota State North University, he had a little efficiency issue compared to what he's been. He's okay. He's allowed a game that's not super efficient because he'll still get his. He'll still get his 20. The guy that's going to be your leader tonight is going to be Copeland because he also is from that region. He's from the D.C. region, Virginia, I think. No, he's from Carolina. What am I talking about? But he went to Georgetown's my point. Okay, so it's right. Kind of like home. He'll be fine, and he's taking on two young pups, where as a matchup on the offensive end, Cope in his mid-range, Coach Cope in his stretch ability is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And he's got to lead. He's got to be the voice. He's got to be vocal. He's got to keep things calm. Roby, don't ask me. I don't know what he'll give you. Is he going to play? Yes. Will he start? Likely. Great. Is he going to give you a career-high 20? And I'm sorry, but that was an ugly 20 against Fullerton. It just was. Mm-hmm. He got his 20, but it was a second-half Roby performance. The first half was a mess. They're going to be physical against him. Roby right now, man, is a guy that you just look at for athleticism and defense, and maybe you'll get some help from him in some of the remaining big games offensively. But just let Thomas Allen be your third scorer. Glenn, if you can get 11 or 12, good. But play defense and run the offense. Let Thomas Allen be your third scorer. Let James and Cope do their thing. Nebraska could get beat up and bullied on the inside. The saving grace is that Maryland isn't super experienced. Bruno went gangster last year. He's tough, mm-hmm. but he's it. So let him get his. Defend everybody else. Get out of Dodge with a win. Okay, this is stupid, but just don't get blown out. I also wonder if they can just, like, flip the switch. They've been on, like, autopilot sleepwalking, because they can be, the last three games. Now you're jumping in on top of the fact you've had this choppy schedule. They better start well. And Nebraska, to their credit this year, because of how veteran they are, they have started well in every game. I mean, I can't think of many games they haven't started well. At Minnesota, they started each half well. Started the game great against Texas Tech. Yep. They were back and forth against Creighton. It wasn't a bad start, but Nebraska started and found the rhythm against Creighton. And then they had a great second half start to match Creighton's start. Really good early against Clemson. They blasted Seton Hall, with part of that recipe being a good start. This team knows how to start well. Anthony Cowan's really good. He's quick. What type of foul trouble does Glenn get into tonight, if at all? That's something to watch. But, yeah, I think Nebraska's excited for this. And if, God forbid, they don't pull it out in Scott Van Pelt land, it's okay. Lots of season left. You get Maryland coming back. The Big Ten has a billion 10-win teams, okay? You have a billion 10-win teams in the Big Ten going into conference play. And mind you, it's been – they've played a lot of Big East and ACC teams. It's not like they've just kind of stacked the deck and went K-State's college football schedule version of basketball. Let's talk college football here. Jacob Padilla's coming up here in a minute. Thumbs up or down on the bowl games? Georgia, I was very loud about wanting Georgia in. I thought they were the better football team than Notre Dame or Oklahoma. I was wrong. I think Oklahoma's damn good. When Nick Saban rolls up to you, if you're Lincoln Riley, and smiles, and I read lips. Usually I don't read lips that well. I read this very well. Saban's got this smirk like, I kicked your butt, boy. But, son, you got a hell of an offense. So I got a kick out of that, okay? Oklahoma's good. Kyler Murray was a ton of fun to watch. OU manned up and kept trying to chop wood and fight. The Big 12, for that matter, did well this bowl season. Look, it's cliched, but it's a reality. Teams either want to be there or they don't. And you can roll your eyes at it. You can scoff at it. You can give it the middle finger, but it is true. I remember back to the Nebraska-Washington Holiday Bowl. Nebraska crushed that Washington team earlier in the year. You lose to Oklahoma, you lose a consecutive Big 12 championship game, you're kind of like, screw it. It sucks for the fans, but it comes down to motivation. And Georgia, based on how things ended last year, being one of a handful of teams to beat Alabama, we are early by a minute. It's okay, Willie J. Willie's like, shut up, go to break. Listen, you have Georgia, that they're better than that, okay? And listen, they'll learn from it. They can't just show up. When's the last time Texas looked like a team that cared about tackling, that finished running the football strong, and had some attitude and physicality to it? Forever is the answer, the last time Texas looked like that. Probably a Vince Young squad where they knew they were great. But Ellinger, their quarterback, and Ellinger's mom, Ellinger's mother, that was a nice hug. They've got their blue collar quarterback. They do. That helped things. Texas looked fast and furious. So I don't know that I like that, but kudos to them and Coach Herman. Georgia, you're embarrassing. Joe Burrow, you're a tough SOB. Great ball game between them and Central Florida. And Penn State choked. They got soft and conservative. Was there for the taking. Jacob Bedilla talking Maryland, Nebraska next with Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Husker Hoops Insider with Hail Varsity's Jacob Padilla. At Jacob Padilla _ is where you can follow him on Twitter. Jacob, happy new year. Hope you're doing all right, man. Ready for hoops tonight, Nebraska, Maryland.
No doubt. It's a hoops-heavy week, and that's no better time of the year for me.
I know you love it. You're into it as Nebraska closed out their non-con and really kind of a whacked-out schedule. 3 games, 24 days, not great competition. Nebraska won with ease. What are you looking forward to tonight? Do you think Nebraska is going to be able to flip that switch against high competition again? We know how good Nebraska can be. It's been a while since they've seen somebody as talented as Maryland.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch, especially the way they started kind of these games the last few weeks. It's taken them a while to really get going and kind of figure things out offensively. And once they've done that, they've been fine. But against the good teams, you're not going to be able to ease your way into the game and figure things out midway through the first half or at halftime, because you're going to find yourself trailing by that point if you kind of wait that long. If Nebraska can get off to a good start here, I think that'll be a huge key, because Maryland's good enough. I don't think they've been quite as good as I expected and some others expected, but they're still a very talented team, and they've got the pieces that can certainly give Nebraska problems.
Kind of break down Maryland for us. I know Cowan's super talented. Bruno's a man in the paint. You have Jalen. Those are the three stars, but overall, where can they give Nebraska problems? Let's start there.
Cowan, kind of at the point of attack, like I asked Tim Howes about him, and he just mentioned his speed and how fast he is, and how they cannot let him get into the open court, because they've got no chance of catching up to him at that point. So that'll be a fun matchup between him and Glenn Watson Jr. Glenn's become a really good defender. Nebraska can kind of disrupt the Maryland in the backcourt and make it tough to get the ball inside to the big man. I think that's probably honestly your best bet, of slowing Bruno Fernando and Jalen Smith down, is just not letting them get the ball in their spots. So I think Nebraska's got to play strong perimeter defense against Cowan and some of those other guards on the perimeter. And because they also can shoot a little bit, a couple of their freshman wings, those guys can get dangerous. Cowan's really struggled with his shot. He's only under 33%, quite a few attempts per year, but you've got two freshmen, Aaron Wiggins and Eric Ayala, I believe both were four-star recruits. They're both shooting over 40% or better on a combined almost 9 attempts a game. So you got to slow down Cowan at the point of attack, make it tough for the big men to get to their spots, and then stay attached to those shooters on the wings.
Jacob Adilla is with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. He covers Nebraska basketball, previewing Nebraska and Maryland. At Jacob Padilla _ where you follow him on Twitter. Jacob, you mentioned what Maryland can do. Let's flip it around. From a matchup standpoint, where is Nebraska better or equal to Maryland? We know about the core four, but who needs to shine tonight? Anybody other than the two obvious in Cope and Palmer?
Yeah, I think it does start with those guys. You got Copeland kind of matched up with a freshman and Jalen Smith there. He's a talented kid, but he's still a freshman. So you think you'd like to go to your senior kind of in that matchup, bring him out on the perimeter a little bit, get to his spots in the mid-range, and make things tough on him. And then, again, they've got freshmen on the wings as well and freshmen sophomores on the perimeter defending. So I think Palmer is going to be a key for this one as well. Those two guys, I think, are going to lead the way. It'll be interesting to see what Isaiah Roby is able to give them. Sounds like he went through their shoot-around this morning and appears to be on track to play unless it suffered a setback at some point. But you wonder just how effective he'll be able to be or how many minutes he'll give them. So I think this is a game where you're going to have to ride your top two guys and then get kind of your average play out of Watson. I think Cowan's a pretty good defender. It'll be fun to watch that matchup on both sides. So I don't necessarily know if Watson's got a big matchup here where he could go off for 25-plus. But if he hits his shots and you get solid play out of Palmer and Copeland, I think Nebraska will be able to stay ahead of Maryland.
Thomas Allen's a guy that I've really enjoyed watching, and he's kind of been hot lately. Is he a guy that if Glenn's putting all his energy into defense and say you get an efficient Glenn, but not a Glenn that goes off like we've seen in the past, say you get 10 from Glenn on eight shots, right? But he plays great defense. He's not in foul trouble and he directs things like he does. Does that allow Allen to be your quasi third option, either getting to the rim like he's shown the ability to do, but he's been a dead eye from downtown. He's been really good with the mid-range and the three-point shot. What's his expectation tonight against this Maryland defense?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and he really has played well. You look over his last five, he's scored nine or more points in all five of those games. He's got three double-digit games, including the 18 points against Creighton. And during that stretch, he's also got 7, 10, 12 assists and one turnover during those five games. So that is a really impressive figure right there. He's taking care of the ball. He's making a few plays for others here and there and then finding his spots and hitting his shots. So Thomas Allen, if he continues to kind of grow into this guy, because you saw early in the season, he'd make a play here or there, but he was mostly just kind of being that fifth guy out there, not doing a whole lot, struggling a little bit, hit his shots, kind of on limited attempts. But lately, I think he's really found his kind of niche within the offense and been comfortable in his role. And you're seeing his play elevate closer to what kind of the expectations might have been for the guy coming out of high school as highly ranked as he was. So if he's kind of getting close to on par with those other guys, and now you've got five guys that are a threat to go off in any given game, then that's going to be tough for teams to deal with at Nebraska, because like you said, if you put a tough defender on Watson and challenge him on both ends of the floor, then you've got Allen there that can kind of pick up the slack and take advantage of whatever situations he gets because of that. So if Nebraska can get really balanced offense out of that starting five and have a guy like Nana Kenton come in and get some minutes here and there, hit a couple shots, I think you've got more than enough offense to win a lot of games in this league.
Coach Miles feeling better about his bench? I mean, that's going to be a key question, too, with just the concern about the number of minutes that Cope and Palmer have already logged, let alone what's ahead in the second season in conference play. Has the bench stepped up, or is the feel there that it's not as bad or thin as the perception may be?
Yeah, and that's interesting. I asked Tim after the Southwest Minnesota State game kind of if there were anything that kind of stands out that he learned from about his team from the non-conference. And one of those he mentioned was that he thinks they're deeper than he thought they might be. And we haven't seen big minutes from that bench, so he hasn't necessarily backed it up with playing time for those guys, but it seems like he feels comfortable with what he's got with the combination of Tanner Borchardt and Brady Hyman coming off the bench at the five and Both those guys have kind of had their moments where they've made big contributions. And Miles even mentioned he's got to start getting Hyman back out there a little bit. His minutes were pretty up and down. There's some games where he barely played. So I think you'll start to see a little bit more of him as he kind of continues to adjust to this level of play. And then Nana's been kind of that spark plug off the bench from an offensive standpoint. Getting Amir Harris back defensively and just kind of from a hustle standpoint, rebounding, I think that'll help. Miles mentioned that he went through practice on Monday in a limited fashion. So it wasn't full go, but he is starting to make his way back from that illness that has knocked him out the last handful of games. So that'll give you just a little bit more depth because you've got a guy like Thorbjørn Arnarson that you can kind of throw in there from time to time as well. Now he's stepped up and played a little bit with Harris out and made one or two plays, I think, that kind of jumped off the court in the few games that he's gotten. So I don't think it's one of the best benches in the league by any stretch, but I think Tim's starting to feel comfortable with the pieces he's got and the way he can kind of mix and match lineups together where you don't lose too much when some of your starters are sitting.
No, I like Nana's athletic ability, and you mentioned Hyman and Borchardt. They've been good down low when called upon. It's just that they don't get that phone call too often. And Roby's kind of always the wild card, isn't he? I mean, you've went 11-2 without great games from him. I know he had his career high, but that was a tough ball game against Fullerton. Just kind of a sloppy game overall. Once Roby gets healthy, is he just thinking too much about this, or is he just deferring? What do you make of it?
Yeah, he certainly hasn't made that jump that I think a lot of people were hoping. In fact, he's probably taken a step back from where he was last season. And I think he's one that's just kind of struggled to figure out just what to do offensively. Like the game, I think the game comes more naturally for him on defense than it does on offense.
Sure.
So he is thinking when he gets out there as opposed to just reacting. And sometimes that leads to some of those turnovers and some of those rough offensive plays. And he misses some opportunities where he could make an impact just because he didn't read the play well enough. So I think that's something that he's kind of struggling with is figuring out, all right, this is what I do well. This is when I need to do it and all those kind of things. So, that's both a positive and a negative. You're 11-2 without Roby giving you what you thought he might give you. But that also means that he isn't playing as well as you hope. So if he can turn it around, that's reason for optimism and more upside. But it's also, if this is kind of who he was, then I think it lowers your ceiling as well. So conference play is just starting, so we've got plenty of time to figure out what the deal is. But he's definitely, I think, the guy that you need to keep your eye on the most to kind of see, to project how this team will end up being coming the end of the season.
Jake, about 30 seconds here. Maryland, I mean, give me a scale of 1 to 10, how physical of a matchup they are for Nebraska.
Yeah, I'd say that's they're probably 8 or so. Like Bruno Fernando is just a beast.
Mm-hmm.
6'10", 240 pounds of chiseled muscle. But outside of him, I don't necessarily know if they've got a ton of physicality. Jalen Smith, I think, to Miles, call him Sticks. He's a pretty skinny kid there, and you've got some wings. They don't have a ton of. You got Ivan Bender is there on their bench if they need him. He's another taller, skinnier guy. So I don't necessarily know if they've got a ton of physicality outside of Fernando, but Fernando is an absolute load, and even though Nebraska won last year, he gave him 21-9 as a freshman, and that guy's only gotten better. So it'll be a tough matchup inside, especially with Roby limited, or kind of we'll see what he's able to give him. But Tanner Borchardt, I think, has got to be ready to go tonight and give a few of his fouls that he loves to do.
Jacob, thanks for checking in. We'll get caught up later on. Appreciate you.
Sounds good.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Yeah, best part of the new year is you get to see Mike Shewhart.
Hey,
Happy New Year. Shuey, Happy New Year, man.
It's awesome, huh?
It's good to see you. Shuey, what'd you do New Year's Eve?
Just hung out.
Yeah?
Watch a little TV, watch a little
Do you watch Anderson Cooper take shots?
Yeah. How about that? So, not much.
I'll never feel so bad about anything in my life. I don't look like that when I'm down in Patron.
Yeah.
Hey, it is awesome to see you. We can talk golf. We can talk football. You're a big Nebraska basketball guy.
Oh, yeah. Big game tonight.
Big game tonight. Let's start there, Shuey. And Mike Shewhart's in studio with us every Wednesday at 4:40. Can go see him at Wilderness Ridge. I demand you do that. Love him. But, you know, I think tonight's kind of a go play well game.
Yeah.
Go flip the switch and amp up your competition level compared to what you've seen. Not Nebraska's fault. Is what it is. Weird schedule for them. 3 games, 24 days.
Yeah, really weird schedule.
Really? Really weird.
I mean, they play one game a week and for the last 3.5 weeks, so it's like...
And it's not been against
competition. No, so it's like how well
you can play down to your competition.
No
and Nebraska, I think, did that and still rolled. I mean, I'm not criticizing them for their margin of victory at all, but they've really got to step up.
Now you're going to play a team that's good. Every week you're going to play it. Every game you're going to play a team.
You're going to play someone that's really good.
It's going to be exciting because it's just the Big Ten. If you look at it, I mean, every game is going to be one of those games that comes right down to the to the wire pretty much because everybody's pretty good. And you got to bring your game, and you got to play good in the last 5 minutes of the game, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the way if you do, you'll probably win. You'll probably win some games. You'll win a lot of games, actually.
This team's good at doing that. They were good at doing it a year ago. When the league was a little down, but you've still done it against Minnesota, you've done it against Wisconsin, you've done it against Northwestern, you've done it against Maryland.
Yeah. And I think they're better than people think. You know, they lost to Texas Tech, but Texas Tech's a really
good team. Texas Tech's a damn good team.
Texas Tech's a
three seed.
Yeah.
They'll probably finish second in the Big 12.
And, you know, the Minnesota game was a little bit, but, you know, it's like Minnesota, again, is probably better than people think
They're still a 10-3
exactly
Big Ten team.
So at least I look at it. I mean, I think Nebraska's probably a lot better than I thought. I knew they were going to be good, but I think they're a little better.
Sure.
And it's all going to come down to crunch time. How well do they shoot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
they got to shoot well tonight.
That last 3 to 5 minutes, man, can you make some key shots, you know, and not go on a little bit of a drought like they can at
times? What kind of shots are you taking?
That's the key.
Are you getting free throws? Are you getting to the rim? Are you driving and kicking to Thomas Allen, who's spotted up around the arc for three? Because that's the dude. James is James. James has been phenomenal. But aside from James, the guy I want taking the key shot in this offense is Thomas Allen.
Yeah, and he's
done and I love
real-
and I love Cope.
But Cope, man, to me, Cope is the most consistent player on the team, man.
Sure.
And he knows what he does, and he does what he does. You know, he takes shots from the free throw line, and he'll shoot some three pointers. But
he's a smart player.
Yeah, they're good three pointers when they're there. But he just plays his game very consistent. He's the most consistent player I think they have on their team. You know,
absolutely.
And Thomas is now finding his shot a little bit.
He's good.
So it's like, and they're getting it to him in good situations, and he's making some shots. So
he's playing D too.
Yeah.
So
that's the other thing that I like about it is that they pretty much play D no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's probably the best defensive team I've seen in a long time there. You know, they play D from the tip off to the end of the game. Mm-hmm. So
how you feeling then about tonight?
I don't feel great about tonight.
I don't either. I don't feel good because they've had this lull. They've been off, and they've been off against
and play
competition.
And then got to go play on the road, first game, you know, basically. So it's just weird. I wish they just had a little more. They had a few more games leading up into this.
Sure. You wish you had a warm-up.
You know,
I feel better about Iowa Sunday than I do against Maryland tonight.
I feel good about all the teams. If they play their game, they don't have to play great. If they just play a decent game, they can win a lot of games. Mm-hmm. They're going to be close ones. But it's like the football. If you watch the football, these teams take these – by the time they play a bowl game, I mean, some of the bowl games.
You can have surgery on your ankle and your back throwing darts against Oklahoma.
And then some were sloppy. You know, some of the games were penalty, sloppy games. Just, you know, some of that's just rust. You know, you haven't played for a long time.
Got to ask you here. Let's go to football. Your takeaway from Harbaugh and Michigan's performance.
Wow.
And also Georgia v. Texas. I didn't stay up for all of it. I got enough of what I needed. And once it was 17-0, I was down for the count. I couldn't make it through a whole Texas beatdown. Washington slept walk and covered against Urban. So start with Michigan, though. That was flat-out embarrassing.
Yeah, that was the most surprising one to me.
For them to get just destroyed by
that wasn't
a
even
very poor to average Florida offense.
Yeah, that wasn't even a game from the beginning.
No.
I mean, they were not even engaged whatsoever in that game whatsoever, which was really surprising.
Well, they were missing some key dudes on defense. That's a reality.
But, I mean, if you're going to play at that competition, the guy that's next in line should
be
able to be ready and step in. And it's like, maybe those guys aren't really
ready. Devin Bush isn't going. There's a drop-off.
That's true. It's hard to replace that dude.
but
still.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
You got to replace him next year.
No, you do.
Because he ain't going to be there next year. If that's what you have to replace him with, it's like, that's a little it's not very encouraging.
No.
For sure.
I think Michigan will be better next year. They'll get it next year. They'll get it fixed and figured out. I don't like all of these dudes just checking out, going to the league. Coaches are held hostage.
I was just going to say that. I mean, that's one of my things that I don't. I understand, but
don't sell out your teammates.
Exactly. You know, because it's contradicting to me. Mm-hmm. Is that when you come into a program, you recruit, you sell these kids on what? The team unity, the brotherhood. And now all of a sudden you're playing this
playing for
game,
the right
and it's like, I'm not going to play this game because I don't want to get hurt. So what's that? What kind of what is that saying, really?
Well, the last guy I'd want to go into his office and say, "Yeah, peace out," is Ed Orgeron.
Exactly.
Okay, because he may break his desk with his forehead, but he had six dudes do it.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean.
That's the really concerning thing to me is that
this is the old slippery slope, and the floodgates are open now, Shuey.
And I get it because if you do get injured, you know, and it can cost you a lot of money. But
Jalen Smith for Dallas, he's been incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, but he had to wait a year and he got hosed on his guaranteed money. He's been great for Dallas, but what he did for Notre Dame and to blow his knee and like almost lose a leg is incredible. Let's go to the phones real quick. We got about a minute. Let's sneak Brian on with Hail Varsity. Brian, go ahead. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, buddy.
What's up, man?
Am I the only one in the camp that thinks Harbaugh is gone?
I think he's probably weighing it. I think him and Green Bay would be a lot of fun with Aaron Rodgers.
Or keep it Broncos land because I'm a Broncos fan.
Well, here's my thing. Elway will still find a way to screw up your quarterback spot.
He will.
I am sorry, Brian, about that. Appreciate you. Thanks for dialing in.
Thanks, man. See you.
Keep cheering. If I'm Zach Taylor and Elway offers me that, I politely say thank you. I'm going to stick with Sean McVay for another year.
Exactly.
More with Mike Shewhart. We'll wind down hour one with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour. Big thank you. Tip of the cap to Willie J as he's filling in for the Pride of Chicago. Danny Burke, Mike Shewhart sitting in. Chris Schmidt, Brad Edwards 10 minutes away. Get his take on the bowl games, on Bama, on Georgia. All that good stuff. Also, Andy Markowski, former Husker standout, the pride of Ord, right before tip-off. We'll get his take on Nebraska, Maryland tonight. I asked Santa for a new golf swing.
Oh, how'd he do? Did he deliver?
He said, go see Shuey. I got a note in my stocking. I left in some eggnog, and he put a cigar out in it. Go see Shuey.
He didn't want any part of that.
He didn't
want to take that on.
That's an option. for folks to come see you and maybe have a New Year's resolution. It's okay to say, I want to be better at golf.
Always.
I want to beat Larson on the green.
All right.
All right.
Yeah, you can always get better.
You can always get better. But despite the wind chill of yesterday and the day before, they can come see you and stay warm.
Yeah, relatively, depending on. Now, those days a little tough, but yeah.
Man, you're not
up,
making them walk nine is my point.
No. I mean, look in the weather forecast, man, it's going to be golfing weather here this weekend.
I know.
So that's awesome this time of the year.
We'll have basketball tournaments, but
I'll be out on the golf course.
I like that.
Giving some lessons, actually.
Good, man. Mike Shewhart's in with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Shuey, so I got to ask you, what bowl game were you locked into most yesterday?
The LSU game.
You wanted to watch Central Florida LSU?
Yeah, just because I wanted to see, you know.
How tough a SOB is Joe Burrow?
Very.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed
with
him.
He's kind of a Husker throwback.
Yeah, I mean, he just kept hanging in there,
made
plays. You know, because he didn't start out the game very well.
No.
And just to see, I mean, everybody is Central Florida. Are they really what they are, you know? And I was very impressed.
I'll say this, and this isn't to suck up to anybody, but it's just obvious. They have Milton and Frost. They win that game going away yesterday.
No question.
Period.
Yeah.
Difference of your quarterback, difference of your head coach.
Yeah.
Heupel's good offensive coordinator, nice guy, yada, yada, yada. They are going to go back to 8 wins as their ceiling.
Yeah. Their defense was a lot better than I thought.
Their defense was flying to the football.
That's Randy Shannon was there, you know? Isn't Shannon there? Is their D coordinator?
I don't know, but it sounds right. Yeah, it sounds right. But they played
good
ball. No,
but they play really. I was very impressed because I didn't think I'd see them against LSU, big monster team like that.
They married well, is the way I'll put it. They inherited a lot of talent.
Yeah, they would have. If Melton was playing in that game, they would have won that game.
Yep. Yeah, missed a few throws there. The other part of this, too, is Central Florida loved to chirp.
Yeah.
So it got chippy.
It got very chippy.
And when it got chippy, all you know, punch to the face mask and all.
Yeah, I was impressed. I mean,
that kind of pissed off LSU and woke them up.
Yeah. And then they started flexing their muscle around. And,
they started just rocking
on
the lines
bigger,
of scrimmage.
A little bigger, stronger there.
I think so. I want to remind you about buckling up. Something's got to give when that motion of your body in the car is in an accident. Airbags aren't enough to stop you all the time. The seatbelt keeps you from going through the windshield and prevents excessive injury. Buckle up now, whether it's the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Should we hang out?
I will.
Brad Edwards, College Football Insider, ESPN College Game Day. Coming up, Andy Markowski's on the way. An hour two around the corner with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you back. It's hour two. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mike Shewhart's in. Shuey's sitting in. Willie J is taking care of us as the Pride of Chicago. Danny Burke is, I bet money, still on the tarmac with mechanical problems, as he calls them. We say hi to Brad Edwards. You heard him part of ESPN's bowl coverage. You see and hear him on College Game Day, and you can follow him on Twitter at JBradEdwards. Brad, you have a great new year. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I wouldn't say I had a special new year. I was just working as usual. You know, bowl games, whether I was at home watching or in the office watching and working, it was another day at the office for me.
Well, what did this year's bowl season with one game remaining say to you?
Well, I mean, to whatever extent you're going to try to, you know, just derive some sort of meaning from bowl records by conferences, I think what you see is that there's not a dominant conference. As much as it seemed to be the SEC during the regular season, and I think I'd still lean in that direction, there was certainly nothing dominant about the SEC's bowl performance, and they, you know, were upset in a few games along the way, and I think what you see is a lot of parity in general in college football outside of the top two. And I think that's probably where we're going next. But after watching those semifinal games, I think what we see is that for all the argument about whether, you know, the number five team or the number six team should have been in the playoff instead of three or four, it ultimately probably didn't matter at all because one and two were just so much better than everyone else.
They are, and the gap is very wide. Do you have a different feel about expansion after this bowl season? Have you stayed the same? Where are you at with that?
Yeah, my feeling's the same as it was, which is that the argument for expansion that we've been hearing over the last month or two, I felt like was never really about making sure we have the best team in the playoff. I think it was always about being more inclusive, whether you're talking about a group of five team like a UCF having a fair shot to you know, play it out on the field and show whether they're good enough to compete with those other conference champions, or whether you're talking about a league like the Big Ten or the Pac-12 that have been left out a couple years in a row now, just making sure that they have a team that's in this thing and that their fans are able to be engaged late in the season and, you know, everyone kind of has the same level of excitement over, you know, over the playoff. And I felt like that's what it was about. And I think that, you know, given what happened, that's really all it can still be about, because there's absolutely nothing that happened on the field that would lead you to believe that we need any more than two teams. But last year was great. I mean, last year we had four really good teams in the playoff. We had one outstanding semifinal game and obviously a great national championship game to cap it off. But for the most part, in the 5 years of the playoff, the semifinal games have been snoozers. There just have not been very many of these one versus four or even two versus three games that have been competitive. And I don't see how in the world that would change if you expanded to eight teams. The only thing you could hope for is that your four versus five and three versus six games ended up being really good. But what if five and six win those games? Are you looking at even bigger blowouts in the semifinals right than what we've had before? I mean, that's the risk you run.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, I was shocked by Georgia. I thought Georgia should have been in. Oklahoma, I loved their grit after Bama jumped up 28-0. And Kyler Murray's a lot of fun to watch. I hope he picks football and goes to the NFL. But I'm not ready to jump all over Texas like, they've returned to dominance, but I think they look un-Texas-like for the first time in a long time. And that means, to me, that means big, strong, and physical. They looked great last night. Were you surprised by Georgia and how things shook out in the Sugar Bowl?
Not really. I'll tell you a little inside story here without naming a name. It's not, I guess, not somebody you would know anyway, but I have a friend who bets on college football a lot, who every now and then I'll get these random texts from, and, you know, like, who do you like in this game? And I got one of those about, you know, midway through the Rose Bowl, asking about the Sugar Bowl. And I said, I wouldn't touch it. I said, look, if they both show up, you know, ready to play and they play their best, I think Georgia wins the game easily. But this is the spot where we've seen so many teams in the past just no-show for a bowl game. It's when you are just really close to getting into the playoff or in the BCS era, the national championship game, but you fall just short and you just don't really feel like you have anything to prove by going out there and playing well and, you know, in that bowl. And I don't want to make excuses for Georgia, because I think when you lose by 20 at LSU, you've already shown that even when you're out there playing for everything, you're capable of laying an egg like that. And so I don't want to make it seem like I believe that that's the only reason that this happened. Because Georgia has no-showed for a more important game already this season. But it was not, and I think more than anything, Jake Fromm, he was amazing in the second half of the season, really after that LSU loss. And he looked terrible last night. I mean, just missed a lot of throws that he normally makes. And, on top of some of the players who weren't out there for Georgia on defense and stuff like that, they did not look like the same team. But part of that is what you mentioned, which is Texas has gotten better. And just physically, they were able to hang in there with Georgia. I mean, more than hang in there. But I think past Texas teams would have been pushed around even by an unmotivated Georgia offense. And this Texas team at least has gotten to the point where they've got enough players on both sides of the ball that they're able to make plays, and they're good enough to not only beat Oklahoma once and, you know, give them a pretty good run in the second game, but to beat a Georgia team, whether they were, you know, as completely locked in as they could have been or not. That's obviously a big step forward for Texas, because in a lot of years lately, they haven't been good enough to even do that.
Brad Edwards with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, what's your take on Dana Holgorsen heading to Houston, leaving West Virginia?
It's an interesting decision. It's not shocking, just because he's been at West Virginia long enough that he knows what his ceiling is there. I think he also knows that the team he had this year, not just because of the talent he had on his roster, but also because of Texas not quite being back to what you expect them to be. I mean, he really just – Oklahoma was the biggest hurdle he had to clear, and he came close. But he wasn't quite good enough, and I think if he's being honest, he recognizes that it would probably be 4 or 5 years at least before West Virginia could be in that position again to have a chance in the Big 12. And if Tom Herman and Lincoln Riley keep moving things in the direction they are with their programs, it might be a lot longer than that before West Virginia ever has another legit chance to win the conference. So I think for that reason, it's a good time for him to get out. And I think the fact that Houston, not only, you know, like UCF, wants to position itself as a Power 5 program, even though it technically isn't. I think both of them want to act like Power 5s because they still are holding out hope that the Big 12 maybe sometime in the next few years might, you know, grab them for expansion. But on top of that, I mean, I guess where I'm going with that is that they're willing to spend the money, and sure, not only on other things but also on the head coach, so that this is not a big salary drop off for him to make this move. But you're also going to a place that, unlike West Virginia, you know, is not going to be at a talent disadvantage. Houston, because of the high school talent around that area, should always have at least as good of players, if not better than everyone else in their conference. Look, UCF and USF can say the same thing because of where they're located, mm-hmm, in Florida. But no one should ever have a lot more talent than Houston, and that gives him a chance to, put together a pretty good team in the next few years. And if his goal is to get back into the Power Five as a head coach somewhere else, he's certainly going to, you know, have an opportunity to string together some good seasons here.
Well, in his time at Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, he knows that state extremely well to,
yep,
get some big time talent. Brad, what's your thoughts on Mark Richt stepping down like he did? Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, I think you're always surprised when someone does it at the time that he did, which was, you know, after the early signing period and then after the bowl game. And he did it in such a way, I think the tip-off that this was not planned well in advance is that Manny Diaz left Miami,
right,
took the Temple job. You would think if Mark Richt thought there was a good chance he might make this move, he would have told Manny, hey, stick around because I think you might be the best guy for the job and I'm not going to make it. And the other thing is, no coach wants to do that to the recruits he just signed. And keeping that continuity, look, it's a good thing for Miami that they were able to get Manny to come back, because I don't think too many of those recruits will be upset, you know, because he's one of the assistants who was probably, you know, involved in recruiting some of them to begin with. But yeah, there's no question that the season, I think, took a toll on Richt. I think it just kind of reinforced the bowl game did, how bad their offense is, how far they have to go on that side of the ball. And he must have just kind of taken a look in the mirror and said, you know what, I'm not up for this. This is not a next year is the year thing. This is still 2-3 years away, and maybe I'm not the best guy to do this job. And with it being his alma mater, he doesn't want to drag them through that. And so I think it was, you know, at the end of the day, it was probably the best move for the program, but certainly one that nobody saw coming.
College football insider Brad Edwards, ESPN, College Game Day, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter with us, Hail Varsity Radio. What do you believe about Brian Kelly in Tampa Bay? Is there a chance Kelly could go to the NFL, or is it time to get a raise for getting to the playoff again?
Yeah, I don't know what he's thinking, you know, what his goals are and what he thinks about the NFL. You do wonder if, you know, the amount of time he's been at Notre Dame, you know, and I've talked about Dana Holgorsen, you know, having been at West Virginia long enough to understand what the ceiling is. You know, Brian Kelly's been at Notre Dame long enough to know how well he is capable of recruiting. You know, like, look, it's pretty obvious from the Clemson game. they just don't have enough talent to compete with Clemson. And Brian Kelly might know that Notre Dame will never be able to get to that level where Clemson is because of the academic restrictions. And, I've heard a lot, and I'm sure you have over the years, about how things have kind of changed there. Mm-hmm. They're not able to get some of the same types of players in now that they did when Lou Holtz was coaching. And whether that stuff's true or not, Brian Kelly knows whether it's true. And if he doesn't believe that he could ever put together a roster that's going to be on par with what the Alabamas and Clemson's, Ohio State's have, right now, then maybe it is time to try somewhere else, and we'll see what he decides to do. But I think whatever he believes on that front will be a big part of that decision.
Brad, let's talk Monday night championship game as we look at it here on Wednesday. Who's got the advantage, and what are a couple of keys here for Bama and a couple of keys for Clemson?
Yeah, so I think Alabama has the advantage, and the reason I do is that if you watch that semifinal game against Notre Dame, while Clemson was very impressive, and look, I think their defense even surprised me a little bit with how much they dominated, even without Dexter Lawrence in there, I still look at the offensive side and say, hey, you know what, it was pretty sweet watching some of those big plays they made. But the question is, if you don't get those big plays, if Alabama just being, physically superior to Notre Dame prevents Clemson from making some of those big plays, I mean, Clemson didn't do a lot offensively outside of those chunks, that they had like a bunch of long touchdowns. But outside of that, they really just, had one field goal.
Right.
That's where my concern is I don't think Clemson's going to go out there and run the ball any better than they did against Alabama. And if they don't get those big plays down the field, what do they have left? And I think in the same way that the Alabama defense was far better than anything Oklahoma had seen all year. And I think that very clearly the first quarter, it required an adjustment on Oklahoma's part offensively, it was something they had not seen, and it took them a while to get acclimated to it. I think the same thing is true here. Clemson has not faced a defense all year anywhere close to as good as Alabama's. And where I think it could pose a bigger problem for Clemson than it did for Oklahoma is that Trevor Lawrence, while he's not unathletic, I mean, the guy can run, and you even saw that in the Notre Dame game. He's nowhere close to Kyler Murray. I mean, he's not the type of athlete who's going to escape great pressure. And Alabama is the number one team. Like, we have a metric for we have a rating of quarterback pressure. It's actually the rate at which a quarterback is pressured, rate at which you get into his face and put pressure on him as he's trying to pass. And Alabama has the highest pressure rate without blitzing in all of college football. And to me, that's the key. Like, Trevor Lawrence, for a true freshman, has been incredible at recognizing blitzes and picking them apart. But it's the pressure when you're not expecting it, when you don't see where it's coming from, that's really dangerous, especially when it comes up the middle. And Alabama's Quinnen Williams is a load. And he tore up Oklahoma, who I think has the best offensive line in college football. Mm. I expect him to tear up Clemson, and that, I think, is the danger for Clemson. If he's getting pressure up the middle, that could be big trouble for them. On the other side, as great as Clemson's defense is, I don't expect Alabama to have a lot of success running, but Clemson has shown itself, while they played well against Notre Dame, they've shown themselves to be vulnerable in the secondary against teams like South Carolina and Texas A&M, who are nowhere near as good as Alabama at throwing the ball. The fact that Alabama, for the first time under Saban, is a pass-first team, they're actually better passing than they are rushing, I think that matchup really works in their favor this year. Last couple of years with Jalen Hurts as the quarterback, their strength played right into Clemson's strength. They were a running team. Clemson was good at stopping the run. And when they stopped Alabama from running, Alabama didn't have an answer. I think this is a different one. So while I give Clemson a chance, I think they're a really, really good team. I think some of the key matchups just kind of go in Alabama's favor. And I'll be surprised if Alabama doesn't win the game.
Brad, we're looking forward to catching up with you to wrap up college football next week. Thanks for the time today, bud.
Hey, as always, enjoy it. Take care, Smitty.
You too. It's Brad Edwards. Andy Barkowski is on the way.
And we're back.
Fellas, I think we could
listen to the radio listen.
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back in Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Stand out from Nebraska basketball a few years back. The pride aboard. Andy Markowski with us. Andy, what is most important in these coin flip type ball games if you're Nebraska? What are a couple of things that can separate from a win and a loss this evening?
Well, you know, Nebraska's played one road Big Ten game, and it was against Minnesota, and they, you know, they played well in stretches, but, you know, really the Big Ten and conference games come down to how you finish. You know, most of them are going to be close games going into the last media timeout, 4 minutes to play, and you've got to figure out a way to make plays, make free throws, make shots, and win those close games. You know, the Minnesota game's a prime example. They blew a double-digit lead and really couldn't do anything late in that game to beat Minnesota, and unfortunately Maryland is going to be a lot like Minnesota. They're very big and physical along the front line, and those are the type of teams that I still feel Nebraska does not match up great to. However, Maryland's bigs are young, whereas Minnesota had some veteran bigs, so hopefully maybe those young kids don't play their best tonight.
What do you think the rep is about Nebraska around the league? There's just been two games in conference, but, you know, Nebraska's returning a squad. What are teams expecting when Nebraska visits their gym?
They're not sneaking up on anybody. You know, you look at the year they had last year with 13, you know, conference wins, and, you know, certainly, you know, preseason, you know, projections had them in the top five in the league. You know, some coaches were discussing Nebraska as a team that could win the conference. So I don't think there's, you know, Nebraska is surprising anybody. You know, they have two or three kids that are going to be up for all conference, you know, a fourth in Roby and Allen that are having really good seasons. So it's a team, I think on paper, coaches, you know, don't sleep at night because we're very hard to guard, you know, playing five really kids that can go out on the perimeter and spread you and make shots. So, you know, I guarantee a Coach Turgeon is you know, stressed, but like I said, they're at home. And, you know, it's certainly a tough place to play for Nebraska. But if you want to win the league, this is a type of game that you need to win. Maryland's young. I think they're going to be better as the season plays on, just the amount of freshmen and sophomores that they're playing. So the chance to get them early in the league and to have another great, you know, on the road win that strengthen your NCAA tournament resume is important for Nebraska.
What's Mark Turgeon do well? What makes him pretty much a really good coach? I mean, I know he can recruit, and I know he's had a history of success, but you've been in the coaching industry. What's the thoughts on Mark Turgeon? What makes him a difference maker when it comes to X's and O's?
Well, I think there's a few coaches that can recruit. There's a few coaches that can recruit and hold their kids accountable to effort, toughness, togetherness. And I think Mark is one of those guys. I mean, you look at I'm drawing a blank on the big kid from Texas A&M that is at the Clippers. Dunks all the time. Anyway, the reason why that comes up, you know, he was a top 10 recruit that didn't play a lot as a freshman for A&M under Turgeon because he wouldn't practice hard, wouldn't do the things that he needed to do to play. And that's one thing that's always jumped out at me with Coach Turgeon is, you know, not only does he get top 20 classes, he gets top 50 players. He holds them accountable. The effort is pretty good. You know, I think that he forces them to prepare like an upperclassman, and that's hard to do. It's hard to take the best pieces and hold them accountable to doing the little things that you need college players to do to be successful, and I think Mark's always done a good job with that.
That's got to be a tough discussion. It's your program. You're the man. You're the coach. You want to bring this talent in, but some prospects have been doing things their way for a long time. That's a difficult – you got to kind of break the horse, so to speak, don't you?
Well, you do. You promise them the world, right? In recruiting, it's you know, kind of the best story wins, and if you can you know make that a great story, but then hold kids accountable to what you're going to do to help them become better players, to become all conference players, and then put kids in the NBA draft. And you know, if you look at Maryland over the last 4 or 5 years, they've placed kids in the NBA draft. So I think, you know, you build that credibility, which, you know, helps you then, you know, bring in the next talented kid and make them buy into what you need them to do. And his teams get better. I think through the years, his teams start off, you know, not slow, but young teams continually grow and develop and get better, and his teams do that. And, you know, once again, I think it's an advantage for Nebraska to have a chance to play them earlier in the league than later in the league, because they're playing, starting two freshmen, playing a couple sophomores, versus Nebraska's veteran group. That advantage goes to Nebraska tonight.
Eddie Markowski is with us. Few minutes talking Nebraska, Maryland, Hail Varsity Radio. Andy, I know you mentioned the experience versus the youth here. That's key. And I think Nebraska will be locked in. They've had success against Maryland, but it's been tight ball games. Some other keys for Nebraska, specifically from Cope and Palmer. What do they need to do tonight? I'm not sure what you'll get from Roby tonight. I think he's going to go, but how effective will he be? Who else needs to kind of ride along here as that third amigo?
Well, I really look at perimeter shooting tonight being a key. Three-point line, Nebraska's really shot it well over the last six or seven games here with Bruno and the other inside guy.
Jalen.
Smith, the freshman. Lane touches, Lane drives, rim protection. Maryland is going to do a really good job of really challenging Palmer and Copeland and those guys at the rim. So if we shoot it well tonight, so you look at a guy like Allen, Glenn Watson, can they make 2-3 threes to really maybe go on a run or answer a run of Maryland? I look at three-point shooting as probably being the number one stat at the end of the night. You look at that, if Nebraska can make 8 or 9 threes, I think that will position them to win a close game.
Eddie, that's going to be key for Nebraska offensively. From a defensive standpoint, is Maryland good at messing with the team's tempo? Are they pretty good at controlling the glass? Nebraska's been good in transition, obviously. Is that something Maryland's good at stopping, or is this a team that can run with Nebraska?
Yeah, Maryland's not going to look to play as fast as Nebraska. They like to, play a traditional, two posts. They're going to try to slow the tempo, get on the backboard and try to force Nebraska to keep all five in to rebound defensively. When you do that, you're not able to get out on the break as fast. So I don't anticipate this being a high-scoring game. I think this is going to be a low-scoring game. Nebraska has to avoid foul trouble. The physicality of Maryland up front concerns me a little bit. That's been probably my biggest concern for this team. Can Roby and Copeland hold up? But, as you get into Nebraska's bench with the fours and fives, there's just a drop-off there. I think Borchardt has done a good job, but, the reality of Borchardt versus Fernando, that's a big gap. So Nebraska has to try to stay out of foul trouble. So I anticipate it being a little slower on both ends. I think Nebraska has a better chance to win that type of a game.
Eddie Markowski is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. What needs to happen here? Let's zoom out in Nebraska's next five. Sparty's in town. Nebraska's at Indiana. Penn State's never easy, whether it's home or away. You have Iowa Sunday, and you kick things off with Maryland. What's a good record for Nebraska over these next five?
Yeah, I think the league is really balanced and really deep. I was looking at the stats a couple of days ago. I think there's 9 Big Ten teams with 3 or less losses right now, mm-hmm. and they played a pretty aggressive non-conference schedule between the Big East partnership and then obviously the ACC Big Ten Challenge. To have that many teams with 3 or less losses in the non-conference tells you that the league is very deep. I even look at Illinois on the back end. They're going to beat some teams. So I don't know if there's a one loss. Say you have to be 3-2 over the next 5 to. But Nebraska's going to have to play well. Teams are going to have to play well, win games in the Big Ten. Teams are going to have to stay healthy. All those things are going to have to be in Nebraska's favor. I don't think anybody's going to run away with the league. I think you're looking at a bunch of teams that, 4, 5, 6 conference losses are probably going to keep you right in that top 4, which is going to make it exciting for the fans. I think every game is going to be a struggle to win, and that's what you want to see as a fan.
What type of sense do you get from the fan base? Are they realizing that it is going to be just a pretty big grinder, 20 conference games, that there's going to be some games you drop, there's going to be some tough games, there may be even a losing streak? Are they as nervous, do you get that sense, this year as they were last year?
Well, it all goes back to what is the goal? You know, can this team win the Big Ten title? Absolutely. You know, I don't think you're going to know that, or I don't think we're going to buy into that as a fan group until you're probably 12 to 14 games into the league, and then you kind of, you know, kind of see where you're at that point. I think our fan base are probably satisfied with an NCAA tournament bid, hopefully a top 7 or 8 seed, or maybe you have an advantage in that first round game to get the first win. So, you know, I think that the fans' expectations right now is that this is a good team, that we're having a successful year. I don't think by any stretch a lot of us believe that we can win the Big Ten. But, you know, I think as this thing plays itself out and you start winning games like at Maryland, I think the ante will go up a little bit, where maybe that is a possibility. But right now, you know, going a little over 500 in the league is going to get you into the tournament based on our non-conference resume. And I think that's probably expectation level for the fans right now. But hopefully they play well over the first half of the conference season, and maybe you can set those goals a little higher.
Andy, before we go, about a minute here, and thanks so much for the time. Was there a moment that things switched for you at Nebraska, your team, when you kind of stopped sneaking up on teams and your talent was expected? Did you walk into that, or did you kind of notice it as your career furthered?
Yeah, I think there's two different periods of my career. I think you look at 96, we were returning a lot of good players, Boone, Strickland, the anticipation of that team being really good. I think we started 11-1, beat, several ranked teams, snuck into the top 25, kind of like this team, and then the season kind of fell apart. Ended with an NIT, lost a lot of those players. So 97, the expectation was pretty low. You know, 98, the expectation was low again, and then we got to the NCAA tournament. And then my senior year, even though Teron left, the expectation level was high for us to get back to the tournament. So, you know, I think fans look at, you know, last season, you carry some of that momentum and that expectation in. So certainly that was kind of my career, and I think it kind of matches to this group. You look at going into last season, I think the expectation was somewhat low in terms of you had Roby nobody knew much about Palmer. Nobody knew much about Copeland. You thought they were good. You know, now all of a sudden the bar sets a little higher because they had a really good year last year and they've lived up to that billing this year. So, it would be disappointing if this team doesn't get to a tournament, doesn't finish in the top 4 or 5 of the league, because I think they've positioned themselves. I think they have the talent to do so.
Andy, best to you. We'll get caught up down the road. Thanks for the time today.
All right. Happy New Year, Schmitty. Thanks.
Good to get caught up with the Pride of Ord, Andy Markowski, Huskers in Maryland. Good stuff. Tip off on the way as we'll continue on with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Doug Tavis, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug, Happy New Year. How are you?
Doing real well, Chris. Happy New Year to you, too.
Well, one more bowl game left, Bama and Clemson. And
big surprise, huh?
Yeah, I know. You know, 4 years in a row, the sequel plus one. This is the third time they're meeting in the championship, and Tua was the question mark, right? Tua and his ankle, and what's going to happen with him after he got smoked against Georgia. Well, he looked incredible against OU, and the ankle was healed. They did surgery, Dr. Doug, on that ankle, electrodes, the whole nine, and man, did it work, and the turnaround time is amazing. Kind of take us through what likely went on with Tua, his ankle, and the medical work behind getting him ready for the semi.
Sure. Kind of have to go back a little bit historically to what the whole issue with high ankle sprains has been over the course of years. Of all the ankle sprains that are out there, the high ankle sprain is the one that tends to create the longest time of disability when we're treating it non-operatively. And so in years past, somebody being in a high ankle sprain situation would potentially be 4 weeks to 12 weeks out as a result of that, depending on the severity of it. Now, a high ankle sprain is where the ligaments between the two leg bones just above the ankle joint get damaged. And, of course, like every other ankle sprain, there's degrees of severity. So we don't know what the degree of severity was for Tua, but assuming that, you know, since he had surgery, it was, you know, we'd make the assumption it was a reasonably significant injury to those ligaments. So the typical treatment has been using a boot and passage of time, doing the modality treatments with the trainers. You mentioned electrodes and electrical stimulation, ultrasound, working on getting the edema out of there. But even with that, these sprains tend to take a long time to heal. And so what's been done recently is using a basically a ligament augmentation by putting, for lack of a better way of saying it, a strand of rope in between the two bones in order to hold for the ligament and allow it to heal more quickly. But even without the ligament being completely healed, it provides some stability. And that's why I think we're able to see a guy come back in a, you know, in a four-week time frame. That's pretty remarkable.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Tua and his work for Bama as they advance on to the championship ball game against Clemson. That ankle injury, the ankle recovery, and when it comes to the day, say it's a Wednesday in this rehab process, Dr. Doug, what amount of time is work being done by the athlete or by a training staff for recovery with this post-surgery? What type of time segments are reality to try and get back to the form he was in against Oklahoma?
Well, even right from the very beginning with him, the rehab would start, and in a position like a quarterback, that rehab isn't necessarily going to be working completely on the ankle. So, for instance, you've got an ankle injury like that, you as a quarterback could potentially be sitting or kneeling and working on your throws and keeping your arm in a good arm slot, keeping the strength up in the arm. So those are sometimes things we don't think about. But then relative to what's happening with the ankle, there's going to be typically hours of work that are going to happen on the ankle, working on getting the edema out of the ankle, because with any surgery, along with the injury, there's going to be a lot of swelling. And so there are therapists who are specifically trained to do edema control therapy. And so they work on helping the lymph system get that fluid out of the area. Sometimes that's not a real necessary part of it, but other times a very big part of it. Working on things like being in the water for rehabilitation, and in a post-surgical situation, we got to let the wound heal. But then being in the water can allow us to get active quickly, so he could start potentially bearing weight within a couple of weeks. And moving side to side, doing some plyometric type of work in the water. So it's in a scenario like this, you know, you're pulling out all the stops trying to get that person ready to go.
The mental side was made a big part of his return. The mental side was focused on Dr. Doug. And what can you do for an athlete to help him recover mentally, to get that trust back? Because that's the issue a lot of times. Physically, look, you guys did your job, you did the surgery, he's performed the rehab, but now it's about being able to take that step forward. In his case, it was his right ankle, his plant foot's the left, he's a lefty thrower, to trust that you're going to be strong enough and you'll be okay. How do you help further an athlete in that realm?
Yeah, so it's basically the same thing that a speech coach would do for a person who's expecting to give a big speech. It's repetitive, repetitive, repetitive. you make sure that athlete knows that he's going to be able to progressively bear weight against that leg in the environments that he's expected to bear weight against. And as you do that over and over again, the confidence comes back, so that it's by the time that you're, you know, out on the field, you want to be in a scenario where he doesn't even think about that ankle in terms of as he's stepping forward through a pass, for instance. So those are it's really about a progression or progressive repetition, loading it, knowing that, okay, I did this, it didn't hurt, now I can attempt to do that. If that doesn't hurt, then I can move to the next. And doing that repetitively to the point that they're in game time, you know, kind of situations, then that mental side of it becomes very tolerable.
Well, I mean, there's proof, right? There's,
yeah, exactly.
You see it working, and the plan has been set in motion. Dr. Doug, what's the quickest you've had a guy come back from ankle injury?
Yeah, so it again is very dependent on, you know, the severity of things. Mm-hmm. So with a high ankle sprain, for people who are not in a running and cutting part of it, you could have those people coming back within a couple of weeks. People that are running and cutting, traditionally that's been more along that four-week line. To put a person who's got a really high-grade high ankle sprain back on the field in 4 weeks without surgery, I think is pretty tough.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking about Tua, his recovery, and man, did the tide roll against Oklahoma, Clemson, and Bama on Monday. Dr. Doug, thanks for a few minutes today.
You bet, Chris. Look forward to watching that game.
Well, there you go. There's the magic of Tua. What Mr. Miyagi. Tell you that. We'll wind down a Wednesday. Great to be back with you. Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Okay, we just witnessed assault on Bruno. Roby's D'ing him up in the paint, and you do the old throw it into Bruno. Put the shoulder down, one bounce, two bounce, get a little contact. He freaking mauled Roby. No call. Roby gets back, uses his cat-like quickness, of course, and gets a three, or gets a rebound. Nebraska is up five right now in College Park, and Maryland's shooting the hell out of the three-point shot. That is odd. Nebraska's been great on the glass, which is nice. Not sure I like that shot selection, but whatever. We'll let it play out. We're both streaming this, Willie J.
Yeah.
Now, my iPad's from 2010. Your phone's a what?
It's like 2 years old.
Right, so it's 8S?
7.
7,
mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, so it works out.
Yeah, but, you know, the problem with streaming, especially when there's someone in the other room, is the streams are going to be off. So you're reacting over there. Roby just got a slam, and
you know,
I'm over here like, what's happening?
Man, you know, you probably brought a live chicken to sacrifice for Jobu to get this wireless router in this building working.
Yeah.
So we're streaming on two different devices at the same time, and we're not swearing at the devices, at least.
Mm-hmm.
That's a miracle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Two devices are streaming in this building at the same time.
I guess it's more amazing to you. It's pretty original to me.
No, dude. I mean, it doesn't happen ever. You got to put a quarter in the machine.
Oh, I hear you. Especially in this room.
That's what, yes.
Yeah, so I hear you now.
That's what I'm getting at.
I hear you now, Schmitty.
Okay, so this was good. During the commercial break, the email comes in, chris@hailvarsity.com, where are you taking me to dinner, bitch? My wife emailed the show.
Oh.
I get a kick out of her using that language.
Didn't she tell you your New Year's resolution was to stop being an a-hole?
Right, but she said, where are you taking me to dinner, B?
So where's it going to be?
I don't know. Wherever she, wherever her card is still good. That's what we're going to say. Tomorrow we are loaded up. We'll have a Derek Peterson sighting. Who else am I going to talk to? We're going to try and talk to Lars Anderson. Lars, big radio star down in Alabama. Get his take on things. We may or may not find Lars. But that's the hope. Gary Barnett going to be with us. So that's key. So we're loaded up on Thursday. Willie J., you're awesome, brother. Thanks for coming in. You do an awesome job with Gregeth and Hooks. I appreciate you sitting in today and filling in for Danny. I told Danny, since he's having mechanical problems, it's okay to start drinking. I think Nebraska's missed their last five shots. Cigarettes and blindfolds may have been handed out. So, we'll have a full recap of Nebraska-Maryland as Nebraska's hanging on to this one so far in College Park. Willie J., what do you got rocking?
Nothing. I'm going to go home and sleep.
Yeah?
That's what I'm going to do.
What's the deal with that? Just lost art?
Yeah.
You're always working.
Pretty much.
You're a hardworking brother. Love it. It's Willie J., Schmitty. We'll talk to you tomorrow. 4 o'clock, Hail Varsity Radio. Miss the show, log on the podcast, iTunes, or HailVarsity.com. See ya.